This is Lars. Thanks again for checking out my podcast. Enjoy your day and the show, and let's make America great again.
Lars.
Together, we can forge a new beginning for America.
The 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Now, honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll get back to your phone calls and emails shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. Right on the heels of the former two-time loser presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton, suggesting that we can better take on terrorism by eating more Muslim food. And if you don't believe me, I'll play the sound for you later. We have Ann Coulter, syndicated columnist and the author most recently of the best-selling In Trump We Trust, E Pluribus Awesome, who's suggesting that the United States and Great Britain and the other big powers are really not willing to do the things they need to do, which they could do, to defend us against the terrorism, like the terrorist attack in Great Britain last weekend. Ann, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here, Lars.
I take it you weren't that impressed with Theresa May's bold proclamation that enough is enough is enough.
No, though I feel a little guilty picking on her. I mean, she's better than the Labor candidate, but like all these Western leaders, like Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell, and thus far like Donald Trump, we get a lot of tough talk, but we never get anything, nor is there any prospect of anything being done to reduce the number of terrorist attacks. I mean, we know that a certain number of Muslims, whom we admit, are going to be killers. So I'm really sick of hearing about, you know, the charming falafel shopkeeper in Brooklyn and how he wouldn't hear her to fly and all his daughters go to Sarah Lawrence. Yeah, okay, fine. But along with him, being swept in with him, are Muslims who are swearing to kill infidels and enthusiastic for jihad. Obviously, we have to reduce the Muslim population. This problem of terrorism only arose when the Western powers started admitting Muslims hand over fist. And not only should we stop bringing in new ones whom we have to pay FBI agents to follow around for their entire lives, but how about deporting the ones already here? I mean, it really is an amazing fact that we still have an office at the Department of Justice looking for Nazis so they can deport them. No evidence is required that they've been convicted of any crime. No. Just if you were a member of the Nazi Party. Are there any left at this point? Meanwhile, we're bringing in hardy young Muslims who are posting on their Facebook pages, waving, you know, support for ISIS, waving ISIS flags. And apparently all that happens by being put on a watch list is literally that. We just keep watching you.
Or as you suggest, maybe even ignoring us, since Great Britain knew at least one of these guys. He'd been the feature of a documentary. One of the guys with the knives had been the feature of a documentary called The Infidel Next Door. So he was known to anybody in Great Britain who watched the BBC.
No, that's right. I mean, nothing will be done. Because that's not who we are, according to Paul Ryan. Well, you know, okay, if that's the way it's going to be, then stop issuing the tough statements like you're Winston Churchill. No, you're not Winston Churchill. We're surrendering because of political correctness, and I'd prefer that our leaders just admit it. I mean, most of all, I'd prefer that they be leaders, grow a backbone, and start deporting potential terrorists whom we've brought in as various kinds of immigrants, including refugees, and stop admitting more of them. I mean, I give two examples of just underwritten law right now. The father of Omar Mateen, the one who shot up the Orlando nightclub about a year ago, killing 49 Americans. Well, his father had a long list of affiliations with terrorist organizations. It shouldn't surprise you, but it may surprise Americans to learn. No, you're not allowed into the United States unless you agree not to oppose the government, as long as you do not support terrorism. Well, this was a man who obviously supported terrorism. He never should have been admitted. If that was discovered after he came, he should have been deported. And all those people at the Orlando nightclub wouldn't have been gunned down by his son 20 years later.
But, Anne, you put Donald Trump, President Trump, in this category as well. And he did make the attempt with the first seven nation, now six nation ban, which is now being taken to the Supreme Court. What would you suggest he do beyond what he has done?
Well, my column was too long, so I carefully excised any criticism of our current president, since he did at least try. Perhaps I'll launch that next week. I think he should go back to the pledge he made in his very first policy paper, the most important policy paper he issued, the greatest document since the Magna Carta, shut down all immigration. I mean, everyone acts like this is some crazy idea. We did it from 1921 to 1951, 30 of the most prosperous years in American history. We were getting too many immigrants from too many different places, and, you know, we were getting such wild exotica as Italians. But that was too much. It was changing the nature of America. So immigration was just totally shut down for 30 years. Even liberals consider those our golden years with FDR and the Fair Deal, the New Deal, the whatever deal. it was, and wages went up. It was a very prosperous country. We triumphed in World War II. Shut it down. Just shut it down. We need to dust off the books. It won't be permanent. Yes, eventually we'll let immigrants in again. But how about no immigrants for a decade or so? And then you don't have the religious issue. Then there's no question of that's not who we are and any sort of religious discrimination. No more immigrants. We need to assimilate the ones already here and deport a lot of the ones already here.
I also wanted to bring up to you the example of Great Britain, where apparently Sadiq Khan, I hated to sit and cheer for Piers Morgan, but Piers Morgan was sitting there drilling the mayor of London, saying, so you have 400 foreign ISIS fighters or, you know, Al-Qaeda fighters who've gone over, fought, and come back. Why are they here in this country, and where are they? To which the mayor of London didn't have an answer at all. He doesn't know where they are, and he doesn't know why they let them back in. But America could say, if you decide to go to Syria, you know, or any of the other countries, and you fight, and we identify that you fought on behalf of any of those terrorist groups, you're not welcome back in the country. And tell them that up
front. Right. It's a lot easier for the European countries. They don't even have a First Amendment. As I pointed out in my column, in most Western countries, other than the country with the First Amendment, it's illegal to deny the Holocaust. Are we really still worried about a rise of the Nazis? How about making it illegal to support ISIS or female genital mutilation or any number of other things? And it may not be against the law to say those things in America because of the First Amendment, but we can sure deport you for it. That's what needs to be done. I'm also glad you mentioned Mayor Khan. I was offline and getting behind in my tweeting this week. But when I went back and looked, you know, this was supposed to be this great faux pas of President Trump's that he misunderstood, took the mayor out of context when the Mayor Khan, the Muslim mayor of London, told Londoners, don't be alarmed, according to liberals, because he was sending extra police out. Well, no. If you look at the context of the statement, he was saying, don't be alarmed by the terrorism. That was an absolute lie. He went on to say, don't be alarmed. The very next sentence, as I tweeted out, was something like, please notice how quickly we respond to this. As the police used to say, when seconds matter, we'll be there in minutes. That's to support guns. But in this case, yeah, actually, they could use guns in London. It's really hilarious that they're finally, at this point, arming some of their policemen with something other than a baton.
Or a whistle. By the way, you know, there was a brand new survey out that says 78% of people in London favor arming the police. Now, do you suppose the elites in government will listen to them? Probably not. You should read her column. You'll find it online at AnnCoulter.com. She is the author most recently of In Trump We Trust, E Pluribus Awesome, and I'll look forward to the next column on the president. Anne, thank you very much. That's Anne Coulter. When we come back, your phone calls and your emails, all the issues of the day, and yeah, we'll talk about the president asking for loyalty from former FBI Director James Comey. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you and always glad to welcome back to the program our friend Mark Thiessen, fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and the op-ed columnist at the Washington Post. Mark, I do want to talk about the column you wrote about the New York Times deliberately disclosing the idea of a covert CIA operative. But about that newspaper that you work for, maybe you don't understand them either, but where do they come up with headlines like Trump's intelligence officials did not exactly deny that Trump asked them to weigh in on Russia? That seems like that falls into the when did you stop beating your wife category of headlines.
Well, I didn't see the story, so I can't comment on the Washington Post coverage of it. But they basically said they weren't going to comment on it. But it's been pretty clear that they did talk to that he did talk to them. It's not illegal. He's their boss and he can ask them any questions they want. But it's inappropriate. It really is. It was inappropriate for him to raise the issue with Comey about Flynn. It was inappropriate of him to raise it with Rogers and with the Director Coates. But that doesn't make it illegal. It's not obstruction of justice. So he's not following the rules. But he has no one has yet. You know, all these people running around saying this is like Watergate, like former Director Clapper said, this has already exceeded Watergate. But one, in Watergate, there was a crime, right? Somebody broke into the Watergate.
Yeah.
There's no evidence of a crime yet, no one has yet shown any evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and them. And then also, there's no evidence of a cover up. It's not a cover up. You know, Nixon was like caught on tape. Trying to pay people off to not testify. I mean, it was an active obstruction of justice. There's been no obstruction. Look, so far, Comey and the acting director McCabe of the FBI have both said there's been no interference in the investigation. If there's no interference, that means there's no obstruction. There's no cover up and there's no crime. So how is this Watergate?
No, it's not. And I guess I'd point, and I kind of caught you off guard because I asked you about a brand new story that just broke in the last hour. But the first sentence says top intelligence officials testified Wednesday, today, to the Senate that they never felt pressured to intervene in an ongoing investigation, despite Washington Post reporting that they were. So it almost seems as though the Washington Post hung itself out saying he did all this stuff based on sources. But when the folks who were supposed to have been pressured showed up in front of Congress, they said, nope, never happened. And I just wonder if they're trying to defend their own stories. And then in anticipation of Comey's testimony tomorrow, where I guess from the early releases of his testimony, this is interesting, where we've reached the point where somebody doesn't actually testify. You're already reacting to what he's going to say, even though he hasn't said it yet because it's been released early, that he's going to show up and say the president never obstructed justice, but he made Comey feel so uncomfortable that apparently he said, don't leave me alone in the room with him, which seems really weird to me, but I
kind of like Bill Cosby. He's Bill Cosby or something, right? Yeah. Don't leave me alone in the room with him.
Well, I mean, there's nothing here. It's a big nothing burger, isn't it? I mean, so far, 12 months.
So far, 12 months. So far, you're absolutely right. It's a big nothing burger so far. But again, there's two different things going on here. One is so with the Flynn investigation is not a nothing burger.
I agree with you there.
He was lobbying for Turkey while he was on the contract. He didn't disclose it. There's all sorts of things that he did. I mean, I think Flynn is in real trouble, and he was a very senior campaign person for Donald Trump. That doesn't mean that there's any collusion or that there's any thing that Trump did wrong, but that's a serious matter. The fact that Russia did try to intervene in our election and screw with us should be angering both Republicans and Democrats. And there should be a bipartisan effort to try and find out what they did, how they did it, and make sure it never happens again. But there's certain people in Washington who are trying to use this as a pretext to destroy Donald Trump and discredit the election and essentially, you know, void the vote of the American people. And that's where it falls off the rails. And so they're going into all of these, you know, the implications, that none of which has been proven. And so far, every single person who's testified has said that there is no crime. So, you know, until somebody shows some proof, I'm with you. It's a nothing burger. Until somebody shows me a smoking gun of some kind that Donald Trump was, you know, secretly colluding with Vladimir Putin or the head of the, you know, KGB or something like that, there's no crime and there's no cover-up.
All right. Well, I've got a theory for you, and I want to test it on you because, I don't always agree with you, but you're a good test bed. If I start with the premise that Russia would like to screw with the United States in any way that he can, and the best way to screw with us is to throw doubt about an election in, did they do spear phishing? It looks like they did. Did they try to hack into computers or plant viruses? Yeah, it looks like they did. Was it aimed at electing one person or the other? Probably not. But are they currently screwing with us right now by having the whole country discussing whether or not last November's election was valid or not? Yes. And who are their biggest aiders and abettors? Not Donald Trump, but the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the usual suspects over here are aiding and abetting the Russians in getting Americans to call into question the validity of their vote last November, which is serving Russia's purposes.
That's a really interesting observation, and I'm not sure. I couldn't say to you that you're wrong. There have been other speculations that just Vladimir Putin hated Hillary Clinton and wanted to undermine her, and that's possible too. There's a number of possibilities as to why Russia did what they did, but we should. It's important for our country to know. But you're absolutely right. If Russia wanted to send our democracy into chaos and undermine unity in America and undermine the president, whoever was in office, was the perfect way to do it. They've succeeded.
I mean, if they can keep the president tied up by domestic forces keeping him from getting anything much accomplished, you know, where everybody, all the Democrats on Capitol Hill are saying, we're not backing anything. If Trump comes out for motherhood and apple pie, we're going to be against it because it's coming from him. If they subvert the ability of the president to do anything, it serves the Democrats' purposes while serving Vladimir Putin's purposes as well.
Sure, absolutely. And the other thing that if you follow the Democrats' logic that they were trying to help Donald Trump get elected, they certainly were trying to hurt Hillary Clinton. But it's backfired on them pretty badly because Trump was very pro-Putin during the campaign, which, you know, it's to me as a Republican who can remember back to Ronald Reagan and the evil empire, it's just so bizarre that we have a Republican who is being accused of collaborating with the KGB agent, because that's just something I never thought I'd see in my lifetime. But let's say that's what put aside the collusion, that Putin was trying to elect Donald Trump because he was more pro-Russia and more open to working with him than Hillary Clinton. Trump is now completely constrained in any ability to do anything with Russia. I mean, he hasn't met with Putin yet. He's met with the leader of China a couple of times. He's talking to him on the phone all the time. He's barely had any exchanges with Putin. He can't do anything pro-Russia because of this entire political, you know, dynamic. So it's actually undermined any effort for a reset with Russia if Russia wanted that.
And I've still never understood, Mark, why a reset with Russia was good when Hillary and Barack Obama were doing it, but bad automatically when Donald Trump is doing it. That one seems a little contradictory. Why is it that getting along with them or on the things we can get along with them on is bad for Trump but good for the Democrats? Mark, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and thanks so much. And I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry about that newspaper of yours. You know,
Take care, Lars.
It pains my heart to have to give you a hard time. Glad to have you with me. Glad to take your phone calls and emails, which we will get to next. And the nanny state is in full effect in Colorado, where some doctors say that you shouldn't be allowed to sell a smartphone to anyone under the age of 13. We'll get to that next.
The Lars Larson Show. Naysayers always go to the head of the line on the Lars Larson Show.
That's right, they do. And all you have to do to join Honestly Provocative Talk Radio for America is call me up at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com. I'd like to be able to give you my insights into the pick for FBI Director Christopher Wray. But I don't know a whole lot more about him than you do. In fact, it kind of comes out of left field. He is currently a lawyer at King & Spalding. He would replace the acting FBI director, Andrew McCabe, who took over from Comey when Comey was fired. He's got a history that includes both Chris Christie and also investigations into Enron. I don't find anything about the guy not to like, but I can't really give you any special insights into him tonight. And I mentioned that story that out of Denver, the Denver Herald reports that there are doctors in Denver, in Colorado, who say that ballot measure 29, which would prohibit the sale of smartphones to children under the age of 13, it would establish fines on retailers who sell smartphones to preteens after they've been worn. And we're talking big fines, $500 all the way up to $20,000. There are a number of doctors in the Denver area who say this is a bad idea to give smartphones to preteens because of a lot of reasons. Social media interactions and things like that. But should that be in the hands of the government through a government prohibition on selling these phones to kids of that age? And when I got to thinking about it, I've got a granddaughter now who's a little over a year old. When she gets to be a teenager, she was a young teen, and we said, we're thinking about buying you your first cell phone. Should the government prohibit me from doing that, or should it be incumbent on me as a parent or a grandparent to decide when and where and how that smartphone, which is a connection to the internet, can be used by a young child? I don't really think that's the government's job. And frankly, when was the last time that a 13-year-old even bought a smartphone on her own or his own? Because most kids who walk into a cell phone outfit trying to buy a smartphone, they're going to say, first of all, you need a credit rating. You don't have one. Secondly, you probably need a credit card. You don't have one. Third, you need picture ID, and you don't have that. So how many smartphones are actually sold directly to a 13-year-old child anywhere in America? Or is it more likely that mom or dad or grandma or grandpa walks into the cell phone store, buys, has another phone added to their account, and then hands it to their child? So even if you put the prohibition in place, is it actually going to stop any 13-year-old from getting their hands on a cell phone? That doesn't make sense either. Let's go to Sally, who's in Aberdeen. Sally, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Thank you, Lars. I want to have a discussion with you, not just tell you something, but
okay.
My discussion, the reason I called in, I was listening to Ann Coulter,
mm-hmm.
and you and me and Ann Coulter think alike. Now, she said stop immigration. I was thinking for 7 years, a rest period, with an exception to this legislation if it passed. And that would be those who've been patiently waiting for two or more years. They would be those that have been on the list waiting.
That's
those
fair.
Would be the exception.
That's fair.
And
if you said they're already in line to come in and they've gone jumped through all the hoops and filled out all the forms and paid all the monies,
yes.
That would be reasonable.
And then the other thing is I am a Christian, and I've been praying. And what I think about the Muslim population, this religion, you know, is a religion that we don't have in America because they will kill people if they leave the religion. But I kind of put them in three groups. And I think this is what's happening. You have the radicalized, those who are willing to bomb us, behead us, or kill us because we're infidels. Then you have the moderate Muslim group who, in some ways, they do want Sharia law, but they're glad to be out of their country and here in this new country because there's a kind of a relax, you know, from the rigid rules that are over in the Middle East countries. And then you have the third group, which are clueless to what is happening. But I feel like my parents are from the great Sioux Nation of the Dakotas, North Dakota.
Uh-huh.
And I remember that when the Wild West was conquered, it was conquered by army forts. And they just kind of broke all their treaties and shoved the Indian Native Americans off their land. And I feel like, is this deja vu only? Now, it wouldn't be deja vu. It'd be like, is this happening again? They're coming here and building all these mosques and shoving people out of certain sectors of land that was once, you know, Christian or other religions. And
well, but we don't divide
that way.
Well, and that is probably what's going to happen. And see, I don't see Islam divided up the way you do, because I don't think there is such a thing as moderate, you know, Muslims. If you believe in Islam and Sharia law, you believe in a form of religion that is incompatible with America's constitutional form of government. And I know Muslims who live quite well in our society. and they don't seek to try to impose Sharia law. But if you believe that that is the one true religion and that the limitations of that religion should be imposed on everyone around you, you can't be an American and believe in the Constitution and at the same time believe in a religion that says others must be forced to either submit to Islam or live in dimitude, you know, as a diminished citizen. It just simply doesn't work that way. Sally, nice comments. Thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Wayne. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. Hey, Wayne. You know what? I'm guessing that Wayne isn't paying attention. But that gives us more time for you at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And a couple of times this hour, both talking to Ann Coulter and talking to Mark Thiessen, I made a reference to a piece of audio. And this is stunning because you have the attacks that happened in London, three men in a van with knives who did all that damage, murdered eight people, sent 50 people to the hospital. And the mayor of London sat down with Piers Morgan, not normally a guy I really admire all that much, but Morgan really put the question to him, why are we letting people back into our country who've gone off to foreign lands to fight on behalf of ISIS? And now they've come back, in this case, to Great Britain, and we don't even know where they are. I want you to take a listen to it because Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, sounds like one pathetic leader who's really putting his city at risk.
You are mayor of the capital city where the most recent terrorist attack has taken place. How many of those 400 have come back to London?
The estimate is just over half. So when you
where
look
are
at,
they?
When you look at, well, when you look at the...
No, but seriously,
how
where are they?
How are we letting people back in to the UK who haven't just been trained, they've actually fought, potentially against our troops. How are we letting them back in without knowing exactly where they are and what they're up to? Because out of all the thousands of people that we're concerned about, surely those who've actually gone to fight are the biggest risk.
Well, that's one of the reasons why it doesn't make sense for the government to be cutting resources from those.
See, the first thing this guy goes to is, well, they're cutting my budget. It's as though when you're talking to a liberal politician, all they care about is the budget. Well, it's money. I looked up the budget for the London Police Department. It's 3.3 billion pounds, which is about $4 billion, is what they have to fund that department.
Are they? You're the mayor of this capital city. Where are they?
I can't follow 400 people. What I can do is make sure we have the policies, because what we can do, though, is make sure we've got the resources for the police and the experts to follow these people.
Why can't you instruct the police? Why can't you call Cressida Dick right now and say every one of those people who's come back from a war zone, who's in London, I want them followed?
Let me see why. Because the Met Police budget, roughly speaking, 15% to 20% is funded by me, the mayor. The rest comes from central government. If the Met Police budget is being shrunk and reduced, they've got to prioritise and use their resources in a sensible, savvy way.
What could be a bigger priority than people coming back from a Syrian battlefield with intent to harm British citizens? Why is it not the number one priority? Why are these people just allowed to come back in the first place, and then the London mayor doesn't appear to have a clue where any of them are? I mean,
he doesn't know where any of them are. At that point, I got to give props and kudos to Piers Morgan. He wasn't much on CNN, but apparently back in London, he's a powerful force to ask the right kind of questions, at least in this case. Back in a moment, you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Are you hiring at your workplace? Do you know where to post your jobs to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your jobs to 100-plus job sites and do it all with a single click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to the jobs you have, better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Screen them, rate them, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Lars. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Lars. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Lars. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program Melissa Quinn, who is the Washington Examiner's breaking news reporter. I wanted to find out what she knows about Christopher Wray, who's been chosen by President Trump as the replacement for James Comey. Ms. Quinn, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So what do we know about Christopher Wray?
Well, I think a lot of people were pretty surprised by the announcement this morning. Just
I
to
was.
Start off right there.
I was.
Myself as well. I hadn't even finished my coffee before I saw the tweet come across my computer. But Mr. Wray actually served back in the Bush administration for 2 years. He was the assistant attorney general for the Justice Department's criminal division, and he served in that role from 2003 to 2005. And he really has a background in white-collar criminal defense. But I think the most recent work experience that he has is actually as Governor Chris Christie's personal attorney. And he represented Governor Christie during the Bridgegate scandal, which we all know involved some of Governor Christie's personal aides shutting down the George Washington Bridge. So he has obviously comes from a law enforcement background, which we know that so many Democrats and Republicans as well were really hoping to see that work experience in the person who is going to take over for former Director James Comey, and he certainly has that.
Well, having represented Chris Christie, there are a lot of tough tasks in the world, and that was a tough one. So I can admire his work ethic there. Do you have any idea why this man's name came to the top of the list for President Trump? Any insights into that?
You know, it's really interesting. I had actually saw earlier today that President Trump's aides, when they were looking at the short list of potential replacements for Governor for former Director Comey, were actually pushing Trump to pick the former TSA, the former director of the TSA. But this was really a personal choice for President Trump. But I think the one thing that is most interesting to note here is my colleague at the Examiner actually was able to get a hold of some of the people who worked directly with Christopher Wray. And one of the things that they said was that he was pretty low key. And most importantly, he's going to be someone who really won't hesitate to stand up to President Trump and really fight for the principles and the things that he believes in. Obviously, we know that there's a lot of scrutiny and a lot of attention being put on the FBI at this moment in time. So a lot of people, Republicans and Democrats alike, said that they really felt that he was a really great choice to lead the FBI at this moment in time.
I mean, that is an agency that's in more than a little bit of turmoil, and it's hard to know which version of events to believe, because all the way through last year, I was hearing from former agents and people, one man who used to be the deputy director of the FBI, saying this agency is in big trouble, that a lot of the FBI agents had lost faith in Comey because they didn't see him being the kind of leader that he needed to be. They thought that he'd made the wrong call on the Hillary Clinton investigation and clearing her back in June and acting in what seemed like a very partisan way, to help out Hillary Clinton. And then, of course, the Democrats didn't like him because of what he did in October and November regarding the investigation into Huma Abedin and Anthony Weiner. But having a nice, calm, steady force at the helm might not be the worst thing in the world for that agency.
Absolutely. And I think it's really interesting to note, you know, obviously so much of the discussion and conversation that's surrounding the FBI at this time is obviously regarding former Director Comey and, more importantly, about the current investigation that's going on into Russian meddling in the 2016 election. But I think when we talk about what's going on at the FBI right now, the most important thing to remember, particularly now that Trump has made his pick of the person he wants to be the new director, is Christopher Wray actually is not going to be leading the investigation into the Russian meddling. As we know, last month, the Justice Department decided to appoint a special counsel, and that is the guy, Robert Mueller, the former FBI director. A lot of former FBI directors here. He is the man who is actually overseeing that investigation. So obviously, Christopher Wray is stepping into the spotlight at a really interesting time, but we know he really won't, he's not going to be the man who's leading the investigation into President Trump's supposed, whatever you want to call it, ties with his campaign associates and Russian officials.
Yeah, at this point, as far as I can tell, it's a nothing burger because Even the Democrats, when asked, well, have you found anything yet that shows collusion between President Trump and the Russians or President Trump's associates and the Russians? They've all uniformly said, nope, not yet, but they want to keep on looking as long as they possibly can. I'm hoping that this man makes gets through the confirmation process quickly and gets in to straighten that agency around.
Oh, absolutely. And obviously, you know, when we look into Christopher Wray's background, of course, there's going to be things we can already see that Democrats are going to grab hold on and likely contest. He was a big Republican donor in the past. He contributed to Mitt Romney's presidential campaign, John McCain's presidential campaign. He did not contribute to either Hillary Clinton or President Trump in the 2016 campaign. And of course, his ties to Governor Chris Christie, they're expecting are going to come up as well. But when they were asking lawmakers for their reaction on Capitol Hill today, pretty much across the board, it was, we're okay with this guy, coming from both Republicans and Democrats. And as we know, former Senator Joe Lieberman was the alleged front runner several weeks ago, and Democrats really took issue with that, given the fact that he had a background in politics. But Christopher Wray seems to really get past that threshold, at least.
Melissa, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much for the work you do at the Washington Examiner.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Glad to have you with us. By the way, glad to have you with me as well. And Father's Day is right around the corner. Dads are really hard to shop for. The challenge is to get a great-looking gift that's useful and doesn't break your bank. Thankfully, this year, there are Harry's shave sets. No matter who you're buying for this year, save money with Harry's with a special offer just for my listeners. Use my name at checkout and save $5 off the set. And the limited edition Father's Day shave set includes the matte black razor handle. It's a great gift. A chrome razor stand. Harry's moisturizing foaming shave gel. Three of Harry's handcrafted blade cartridges and a travel cover. It all comes in a beautiful, sleek, giftable box with the option to add custom engraving and a personalized card for free. Go to harrys.com right now. Redeem this special offer just for fans of the Lars Larson Show. Harry's will give you $5 off the purchase. Just use my name. That's Lars. Don't wait. That's HARRYS.com. Enter Lars at checkout and start getting a great shave and giving a great gift.
The Lars Larson Show.